Welcome into the Thunder basketball universe. We are in the home stretch of the regular season, if you can believe
literally.
It.
Yeah.
Literally, yeah. The home stretch of the regular season. The Thunder has played two of its final four home games here inside of Paycom Center, ending out this regular season with a nice four-game homestand. It has been so nice. I'm just excited to be back in the podcast studio. Nick, I feel like I haven't been in this studio with you in 3 weeks, maybe something like that.
It might be even more.
Maybe
we've been on the road a ton. We've had all sorts of things happening, going different directions. You've had a couple special projects that you have been on the road for.
Coming soon.
So yeah, and so it's nice to just get to reconnect. And it's kind of like we can all take a little bit of a deep breath. The team can't because they've still got two more games to go and they got to focus in. But after that long swing on the road, we get a chance to kind of settle in and take stock of what's happened.
Thanks for holding down the fort, by the way. Really appreciate you holding down the TBU while I was away. And the Thunder, well, they were away for 9 days. I mean, the NBA really, you know, did not do the Thunder any favors with the way the schedule worked out. 9 days on the road for the final road trip of the regular season. Five games, a back-to-back in there. You're starting in New York. You go to Philly. You go to Boston, Indiana, Charlotte. I mean, that was a wild road trip. And I remember looking up and realizing we have been gone for over like a week. We haven't been gone this long. It just felt like we were on the road for an eternity.
Yeah. And those are hard games too. I mean, a bunch of Eastern Conference teams that either won or a buzzsaw like Boston, or two really hungry teams with stuff to play for, motivated teams. I mean, that Charlotte team was, is not in the playoff hunt, but those guys on that roster are desperately trying to carve out opportunities for themselves to play next season. Mm-hmm. You know, those guys need those minutes desperately. And so this was a wonderful opportunity for the Thunder to deal with all of that they had to deal with on the road while having to do it without Shea and J-Dub and give this team opportunities to learn more about itself and how it can create advantages on offense. We'll get to all of that.
Yes.
But I wanted to just set that up as a little bit of a primer as to why that road trip could prove to be so formative for this team.
I'm really glad you did set that up, because in addition to just the grind of the road trip in itself, there were also some other challenges that the Thunder was working through, different pieces of adversity that they looked at as opportunities, and they grew from those opportunities. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But first, because it's been a minute, we've got a couple of major looks that we want to talk about. Nick, I'll set you up first. What made you look over this past week?
There were two what I would deem perfect possessions on the offensive end for the
Thunder. I think I know exactly what these possessions are. Go ahead.
Okay, so on this back-to-back at home that the Thunder, by the way, the Thunder comes home and they go straight in to a set of back-to-back games on Tuesday and Wednesday against Sacramento and then against the San Antonio Spurs. And in each of those games, the Thunder had one of these possessions where the ball hit all five players' hands on the possession. And what ended up happening was, you know, a pump fake against a closeout and a guy going right downhill for a pretty open, easy layup for an NBA player to hit. In the Sacramento game, that one was really loud. It came at the end of the Thunder's 24-7 run in the third quarter that OKC was able to charge back and get back into that game and eventually win after being down by 20. And it was an initial drive. The ball got sprayed out to the right corner. Ball zipped all the way around the perimeter, touched everybody's hands on the perimeter. And as those passes, you know, went around the top of the key, each subsequent one was able to provide an extra step or two of space between a closing out defender and a guy that was converging. Ended up in J-Dub's hands. He pump faked, came in to the lane, and hit a little double clutch layup.
Yeah.
The exact same thing happened the next night as Gordon Hayward was the beneficiary.
On the same side of the floor, too, and everything. It was kind of like a copy and paste situation, just with a couple of different players.
Yeah, and that was that, you know, great swing action all the way around the perimeter. Hayward is able to drive that closeout again and score on a nice reverse layup. He said after the game, that was actually his first touch of the game. And that, you know, is one of those great things that really helps you get into a rhythm when you can get a layup right away.
The second possession that you mentioned, I remember specifically thinking, They're gonna keep moving it. Because the ball, I think it was Jay Will. I want to say it was Jay Will's hands. It was like probably the fourth pass of that possession. And I would say Jay Will had like a decent look.
Yeah.
Like he could have easily either taken a shot there or maybe pump fake. We've seen him take the ball off the bounce, you know, before. But no hesitation, no question, quick catch, zip it to the corner to Gordon. And the ball was just keeping the ball ahead of the defense. And I talk about this so much during the broadcast, like when I talk to an assistant coach at halftime, and typically when I'm asking about, like, you know, what did you see offensively that allowed you guys to get a run here or a lead? Typically they say, we kept the ball ahead of the defense.
Yeah.
And this is what they mean by that, is that you were putting the Spurs in a position where they are chasing you the entire possession. They're trying to keep up with where the ball is and who has the ball and getting in front of the ball. And with the way that the Thunder moves the ball with so much pace, it's so hard to keep up when they're moving it like that.
And those are the types of advantages that we were kind of setting up at the very beginning, that the Thunder was trying to learn how to generate more and more frequently on that road trip. So awesome to see that come and play out in that game against the Kings, and then again against the Spurs, that this team was actually able to learn from some of those experiences on the road and then inject them into the game. Paris, you actually had the best seat in the house for those
so
two
great
plays, because you're right there in the corner in front of those guys where both J-Dub and Gordon caught the ball.
Yeah.
From your playing days, what are those moments like when you're catching against a closeout like that and having to make a decision? Because it's one thing that Mark Daigneault's talked about that young players have to learn is even though that seems like you've got this great advantage in front of you, there sometimes players can get that paralysis by analysis of like,
for sure,
I'm open, someone's charging at me.
Yeah.
Do I shoot? Do I pass? Do I dribble? What do I do?
Well, it all comes down to A, your system that you have in place, and B, the chemistry you have with your teammates. Knowing that, okay, the style of basketball that we want to play, we want to move the ball, we want to give up a good shot for a great shot, we want to play with pace. And so the decision-making has to be very, very quick. I'm going to catch the ball. No shot? Cool. Move. And it's that simple sometimes. And these guys, there's a lot of carryover. There's a lot of continuity with this group. And there is a very established style of play. So the decision-making becomes so much easier in that instance. And like a good example of this is earlier in the season, a guy like Isaiah Joe.
Yeah.
If you're a shooter, sometimes knowing that you're a shooter, it just makes life so much easier. That's oversimplified, but to the point where it's like Isaiah knows, like, when I catch the ball, if I don't have a shot, move it.
Right.
That's my
job is to shoot. I'm so glad you brought this up, because as you were describing, like, you have to know what system you're in. I was also thinking, like, you have to know your own personnel as well in your role.
Yes.
It's like, if you're Ray Allen, if you're Isaiah Joe,
you
better shoot that ball.
Exactly.
even if that closeout guy's coming to you, if he's still far enough away, you got to get that up.
And sometimes that's going to be the best option. And then knowing that, all right, if I don't have a shot, I'm moving it. And then it becomes yes, no. The algorithm's very easy. It's not like if this, then that, if this, then that. It's just yes, shoot, no, pass. Great. Okay. And we move on. And I remember sitting there I was in that little corner right on the opposite baseline of the opposing team bench. And I'm watching this play unfold. And I had two thoughts. One, I was like, J-Will had a pretty decent look, but he kept moving it. But as the play was unfolding, I was like, it's going to get to Gordon.
Yeah.
It's going to get to Gordon. Like, he's sitting there. He's ready. And the way that the ball was just zipping, you know that, like, they were in a flow. They were in a rhythm. And the way they had been playing recently, with how balanced the scoring had been, with how many guys had been touching the ball and getting involved, it was like lending itself to this ball is going to touch every single person's hand on the floor.
I think there's a sense of pride in making that final pass of the swing around the horn too. It's like this team wants to play that way.
Yeah.
They don't want to be the guy that stops the ball unless it's glaringly obvious that you're the one that's supposed to take the shot
exactly.
right now. You know,
exactly.
Like the ball kind of hit the end of the line on both of those plays. And, you know, Hayward made the drive, and the rim is right there.
Exactly.
Now, if somebody had converged over, it's a different story. But I love what you were laying out there in terms of almost sort of the binary decision-making that you have. It's A or B. And that is the goal of creating those micro-advantages.
Yes.
Is eventually you make the decisions for your players so much easier on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And you're making the decisions for the defense so much more complicated.
Yeah.
And so if you can just have very simple passing lanes and clear options for your players, that really limits your turnovers and helps
totally.
You get good shots.
And the fact that they had two of those possessions in back-to-back games and they both resulted in a bucket, like, it was just beautiful basketball, just poetic, fun to watch. All right, here's my made you look. You brought it up in the broadcast, but I'm going to talk about it.
Because
it was just, it's so great. It's such a great story.
It was sweet, yeah.
So wholesome. Adam Flagler, the most recent two-way addition to the Thunder roster, joined the Thunder midway through the season, basically.
Yeah.
Well, he got into the game in the fourth quarter and made his first career NBA bucket, which was like a step back three. It was awesome. So happy for him. So exciting. And it feels like, okay, yeah, Paris, you're kind of like leading the story here. Like, that's not much of a story. However, the man was in Portland, Maine, not even, what, 24 hours before that, playing with the OKC Blue, the Thunder's G League affiliate, in the G League Finals, Game 1, flies from Portland.
Tuesday night.
Was Tuesday night. Yeah. And then Wednesday, flies out and is in Oklahoma City and then makes his first NBA career bucket in an awesome game against the Spurs. And I'm just thinking to myself, wow. And then he's probably going to play again tonight. We're recording this on Thursday, April 11th. It's game number 2 of the G League Finals here inside of Paycom Center tonight at 7. I have a feeling Adam Flagler's probably going to be in the rotation for that game as well. So that was just an awesome, awesome moment to see him have this big career NBA moment in the midst of all of kind of the chaotic travel of the G League.
Yeah. I mean, I would ask our audience if anyone has ever flown from Portland, Maine to Oklahoma City.
No.
I have a feeling maybe not, but I don't know all of the logistical details, but I don't imagine there was a direct flight. There might not have even been an opportunity to make only one flight. You know,
right.
there might have been multiple layovers on the way back to OKC to just get there in time to even play in the game. And so just remarkable that this guy gets this opportunity. Also, I think that there was some intentionality behind it from the Thunder organization. You know, this is a guy that dealt with an injury at the beginning of the season and had to rehab from that.
Yeah.
He's been, you know, with the Blue all year long, grinding it out, gets this two-way contract. And we're now, you know, we're at the third to last game of the regular season. He might not get another opportunity to score his first NBA basket after he's been grinding it out for the whole season. You know, Usman Jang, Olivier Sarr, some of the other guys – Keontae Johnson, they weren't available in that game for the Thunder, but Adam Flagler was. And I really think that that was a really nice way to reach out to a guy who's been, you know, busting it all year long and give him that crack at the end of the game to score some points.
And then shout out to Lu Dort.
Yeah.
Making sure that Adam Flagler walked away with that game ball because, and I talked about this in the broadcast, Lu, a former two-way player himself who had his first ever NBA career bucket way back when in 2019 or 2020. And he knows the value of this moment for Adam. And so he's like, I got your back, bro. We're going to get you this game ball.
Yeah, you know, I still remember the Wilt Chamberlain piece of paper with the number 2 on it that Lu Dort was holding up on that road trip.
That's so I forgot about that. And then it just kept getting bigger. The number kept getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. I think we had one that was like 11 at one point.
Yeah, exactly. And then by the end of the season, he's like starting. And then it's like, the trajectory for Lu Dort, absolutely incredible. But I love that he never forgot where he came from,
That's right.
Where he started, taking care of Adam Flagler. Also, shout out to Adam. Also, this brought up another thought in my head. You talked to Lindy Waters while we were in, was it Charlotte or was it Indiana when we talked to Lindy?
Charlotte.
It was in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And he had some wild travel as well because he's also spending time with the Blue.
Yeah, he was with the Blue right before, you know, kind of at the outset of the G League playoffs. But the Thunder took a couple injuries on the road trip, you know, Shea and J-Dub and Gordon Hayward. And so he was like desperately trying to get a flight to meet the team.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't get him there, couldn't get him to Philly. And so eventually they had to send a private jet for him to get out there. He rolled up straight from the airport to the arena. There was all sorts of travel, or, you know, weather and travel issues that were preventing him from being able to get to just be with the team. He ends up playing the last 4 games of that road trip and really, you know, made a pretty big impact for the team.
Great minutes. Yeah. And that's just like true professionalism. Like that's what you have to do when you're in the NBA. That's the requirement, especially if you're going back and forth between the G League and the NBA. It just, it really hones that spirit of professionalism. And these guys are really stepping up to that challenge.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you brought up the Flagler one for your Made You Look. And, you know, a big shout out to the Blue who finished their regular season winners of 12 of their last 14 games. Then they got a game winner from Usman Jang here in this building to send the team out of the first round of the playoffs and into the second round. One, then they had to go to Sioux Falls in South Dakota.
Yep.
Then they had to go to Stockton, California, and then all the way across the country to Maine, and then they're back home here tonight to face Maine in game 2 of the 3-game set.
And the G League is not flying chartered flights,
no,
mind you. So this is all very, very intense travel in a very quick turnaround for the G League, but really awesome to see the OKC Blue participating in the G League finals. You have a chance to get down to Paycom Center and watch this group in action. They are in action tonight, 7 p.m., taking on the Maine Celtics in game number two. So it should be really, really fun to see these guys inside of Paycom Center. All right, let's turn our attention now, because the Thunder has now completed the first two games of this four-game homestand, defeating the Sacramento Kings in a massive 20-point comeback.
Amazing.
The second largest comeback of the season for the Thunder. You remember they came back from like 23 down against Toronto.
Yeah, that was a wild
earlier
one.
In February. Yeah, that was a wild game. That was the largest comeback of the season. But this one, absolutely massive. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, in his first game back after missing four with a quad injury, steps into the game. And, you know, a lot of players need to ease themselves back into action, need to dust off some cobwebs, knock off some rust. Shai is like, how about a 40-piece?
Yeah.
That sounds good.
And Shai admitted after the game, you know, since he took that knee to the quad in the game against Utah, which was back on March 20th, mm-hmm. I think, he hadn't quite been at 100%. And it's just amazing to see the level of pop that he had. And it just goes to show, like, he was really gutting it out for his team during those, you know, times in between. Really good for him to get that just sorted out and say, like, let's rest it and get it all back to 100%.
Mind you, he also had a game winner in Madison Square Garden in the midst of between that game against the Jazz and when he came back against the Kings. Oh, let me just game winner at MSG. Oh, that's fine. Okay.
He had the pop and the lift for that one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Great fortitude and mental endurance there by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But then coming back into this game, 40 points against the Kings really helped the Thunder in that comeback victory. Also had two blocks and two steals. So really, like, he wasn't just giving it all on the offensive end. He was playing Shai Gilgeous-Alexander basketball, and that's getting his teammates involved, scoring relentlessly, but also being a pest defensively as well.
Yeah, Shai just changes your whole team. It's why he's an MVP candidate, going to be right up there at the very top of the list for that award this season. And it's because he really changes the physics of the game. I mean, opposing defenses just have to deal with him, and they have to deal with him a lot of times with multiple bodies. Definitely multiple sets of eyes have to be glued into him. And then on the other end of the floor, he gives it out just as well as he dishes it.
Yeah.
And he's a player that really helps connect this team's defense. It's not surprising to me that the Thunder defended the way that it has in these first two games back with Shai back on the floor. And of course, you know, J-Dub and Hayward as well. But Shai is the real deal all the way around.
I'm glad you brought up the Thunder defense, because that's another topic that I wanted to bring up. Over these last couple of games, the Thunder defense has been absolutely just locked down, especially the second half of that game against the Kings, because the Kings came out of the gates just lights out from three. They knocked down 14 threes in the first half of that game. And then in the second half, only six. And the Thunder held them to just very low scoring. I think it was 41 points in the second half. Just incredible defense. And then against the Spurs, held San Antonio to just 89 points on the second night of a back-to-back. So a really business-like approach for the Thunder, just handling business. But it's the defensive effort that I want to talk about a little bit. Over these last two games, the Thunder's averaged just 97 points allowed by their opponent and just 34% from the field. A massive feat of defensive discipline by OKC.
Yeah, particularly when to start that game against the Kings, Sacramento shot like 8 of 11 from 3 to begin that game.
Keon Ellis had like 6 threes in like the first quarter. It was
amazing testament to the Thunder weathering the storm and being able to just recognize the time and the length of an NBA game. And in the second half, as you pointed out, they held the Kings to 25% shooting from the field. If you do that, it's really hard to get beat if you hold a team to 25% shooting from the field in an entire half. And the Thunder really, you know, was able to put their foot down on that regard. Then to turn around the next day and really give the Spurs absolutely no chance was impressive. And I wanted to ask from your perspective, Paris, you know, the Thunder holds the Spurs to 11 points in the first quarter. It was never really a game after that. I mean, the Spurs never got closer than 29 after halftime.
Yeah.
As a player, how do you operate in a game like that when you're ahead and you have 36 minutes left to play and you know you're probably, there's almost no chance of you losing that game? Do you not even look at the scoreboard? Like, are there some like
no.
things that you do to try to like mitigate that human element of letting up off the gas?
Well, first of all, you don't. I've never looked at the scoreboard in those situations. You can't, because that is like human nature. You will let your foot off the gas. You'll try to coast your way to the finish line, and that's just unacceptable. Secondly, from a Thunder perspective, this is a group who has been on both sides of this, right? A group who has been down by 20-something points at halftime, and they are scrapping and fighting and hustling and down a couple of guys, rallying and trying to make a comeback. All of these are very capable NBA players. Yeah. So, and with a three-point line and with the pace of the game, it's very, very possible to mount just a massive comeback. And the Thunder's done that before. And so recognizing it's still a very long game, you still have to uphold your standards and your habits. As long as you stick to those things, you're fine. But like looking up at the scoreboard, coasting, lollygagging, like just, you know, not playing to Thunder basketball, that's what gets you in trouble. And the Thunder, they did not do that at all in that game.
Totally professional approach there.
Yeah, and recognizing that San Antonio, they were without Victor Wembanyama. They were out without a couple of other guys. So San Antonio was giving players opportunities who hadn't necessarily had chances before. So these are guys that are fighting for NBA contracts, trying to make a name for themselves, trying to make a roster next year, you know, like trying to make a, you know, make a statement. And those are the guys that can be very dangerous in these games. Those are the guys that might launch five threes and try to make them in the third quarter. So recognizing that you just have to give all out energy, because what won you that first quarter is going to be what's going to win you the rest of the game. Right. And you can't waver from that. And the Thunder did a really good job of that in that game.
No doubt. And I think that's, you know, something that we're going to see from this group carry forward. As Mark Daigneault always says, you don't have a different mindset when you're in the playoffs. What prepares you for the playoffs is what you do in the 82 games.
Exactly. Okay, a couple of other guys I wanted to talk about, and we kind of talked about one of them, but Gordon in the game against San Antonio finished with 18 points in that game. That's the most he scored in a Thunder uniform, and he just came out with so much aggression, so much confidence, and you could tell he was really just foot on the gas from the outset of that game.
He's such a unique player for this team on the roster because – despite the fact that he has some similar skill sets to some of the other guys in that wing mix, he is a bit taller than many of them at 6'8", and he's got great heft to him, and you just see him up close, and he's really physically built. He knows all the veteran tricks on the defensive side of the ball, on offense as well, just being able to have that in-between game to get to his spots. And so it was great to see him get into a rhythm right away off of that play that we talked about early. He said, you know, just getting a layup is so big for him in his game. And he was really able to kind of exert some will on the game. And by the way, have you seen his three-point shooting numbers this season? They're above 50% since joining the Thunder.
Yeah, and he makes great decisions out there on the floor. And obviously he's played a lot of basketball, high IQ, played for great coaches and great systems. So really good to see him get going in that game. My favorite part though was the bark.
Yeah.
I was so happy to see it.
It was a very kind-hearted bark.
It was. Yeah. It wasn't the menacing bark. Yeah. It wasn't an intimidating bark. It was like a, we did it bark.
It's like your dog, you know, saying thank you for, you know, something instead of trying to get your attention.
Exactly.
It was like, it was very nice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was really cool to see all the guys rallied around him after the game as well. And Gordon getting in on the barking as well.
That was fun.
Super fun
that
to see. Good. The last guy I want to talk about, Josh Giddey, who had another double-double in that game against San Antonio. That marks his fourth double-double in the last seven games. Also, he's had two triple-doubles during that span as well. What are you seeing from Josh over this stretch here? Because I'll tell you what Royce Young told me post-game. It felt like we were just watching Josh do conditioning drills, running baseline to baseline in that game with the pace that he was playing at offensively.
Very fast, very decisive, and very physical.
Mm-hmm.
I think as we've seen Josh continue to grow and mature into his, oh, by the way, 21-year-old body, he is still so young in this league, but you see him and he's 6'8". He's got the big floppy hair. He's broad-shouldered. I mean, it's hard to remember sometimes that how young this guy is, and he's only going to continue to grow into his frame to be able to utilize every ounce of that, you know, kind of physical maturity that he's going to have over the course of his life in the NBA, in an NBA weightlifting and training program. And he's really leaned into that. Yeah. He's been guarded by other teams' guards more lately. I mean, once again, he's seen so many different coverages this year because of all of the things that opposing teams are scratching their head trying to deal with. I mean, on the road trip, teams were trying to put guards and smaller guys onto Chet Holmgren. Well, that didn't work. So the past couple games, we've seen more of the guards having to shift over and guard Josh Giddey. Well, he's made them pay as well with his size and physicality.
I love what Coach Dagnall said post-game. He said, now teams are weighing the cost-benefit of putting a big on Josh versus putting a guard on Josh or a guard on Chet. This just, it speaks to the how good the Thunder is that they're putting teams in dilemmas before they step out onto the floor. They're trying to figure out how do we stop Chet? How do we stop Josh and Shea? And all at the same time, what do we do here? Because we only have so many assets out there on the floor.
It's made the Thunder a really tough and unique cover all season. And it's something that Mark has talked about, even as a strategic advantage of like, we would like to be a team that when our opponents go into halftime, they don't know what we're going to do in the second half. You know, they understand stylistically how the Thunder wants to play in terms of getting downhill on almost every possession, being a heavy drive team, being a great ball movement team. But they want them to not be quite sure what the rotation minutes are going to look like, who might even start in the second half. And it just goes to show what you're talking about, which is the versatility.
I love that the Thunder is still like tinkering with things and trying out different rotations and lineups. We're at game number 80.
Yeah.
80. This is typically when you see NBA teams like start locking in things and the clay starts to harden on rotations and things like that. And the Thunder's like, we're going to stay open-minded and unpredictable, most importantly.
Well, you're going to have to be that way in the playoffs.
Exactly.
And I mean, if you end up becoming a one-dimensional team in the playoffs, well, that's a surefire way to be out in four or five games. And so the Thunder is so great. One of the phrases that you kind of hear all the time is double down. And one of the things that the Thunder doubles down on is its identity of being aggressive and experimental and a moving target. And if you're not, your fastball better be 104 miles an hour.
Exactly.
And, you know, no NBA team has 104 mile an hour fastball. So
you've
got to be willing to continue to stretch yourself and your bounds. Otherwise, those will get shrunk by an opposing team who's going to get a chance to see you over and over and over again.
It's all about sticking true to your identity, regardless of what situation or, you know, environment you're in. The Thunder's done that all season long, really over the last forever. That's the Thunder way. That is how they operate. Nick, I have one more thing that made me look.
Okay.
The dynamic duo sideline team was back in action.
We finally got back together.
Okay, so a little insight. During the Thunder's 9-game road trip, you might have noticed a different voice on the Thunder TV play-by-play. That was Mr. Matt Pinto filling in for Chris Fisher because he and his wife welcomed their first baby into the world. Congratulations.
Shout out Chris and Kobe.
Chris and Kobe, congratulations to you two. But that meant our guy Nick Gallo was on radio play-by-play, absolutely crushing it up there with Royce Young. And I'm just so, so excited because I know that MSG game winner by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was so fun to call.
I mean, yeah, what a great honor to be in that opportunity, you know, sitting at center court of, you know, Madison Square Garden, one of the most historic places in the NBA, and to have that game come down to the wire like that and have Shai hit that shot. It was so much fun. And then Paris, you got to talk to him on the floor afterwards, which was so great. I just, the whole thing made me smile all the way around. I got to do the game with Royce, who is, you know, one of our great pals here at the Thunder. And then, you know, I was peering down from way up top and I was getting to watch you with Shai and the guys mugging around you, that both Jalen Williamses. And I just like, man, this is awesome.
It was a lot of fun, but I will say I did feel like I didn't talk to you for a long time just because we are always doing everything together. And so with you doing radio and me doing sideline, it was just really strange. So we're going to take a short break here. We're going to get a chance to listen to you a little bit. Here's that MSG call from radio play-by-play, Nick Gallo.
Giddey's got it right at that hash mark near the Thunder's bench. Dort setting a screen for Joe. Shai's got it on the baseline on the left side. Jumper is good! A game winner potentially from Shai with 1.8 left on the clock. The Thunder goes up 113-112. The Knicks are going to have one more crack at it, but that is an MVP caliber shot from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Can you walk us through that go-ahead bucket with 1.8 seconds left?
God.
Coach drew up a really good play. We got to it before, so we all knew what was going on. I tried to just get double open, and I knew if I screened hard enough, I'd be able to get a crack, get a catch, and get a shot out that I've shot many times.
Coach Dagnall talks about finding different ways to win games. This was a low-scoring rock fight. What did it take to come out on top on this one?
It took grit, took fight, took this guy being miraculous all night. It took a lot of things, but every night is different. You never know what it's going to look like, and we'll take our W's. We won't take it for granted.
16th comeback of double digits. That leads the NBA. What is it about this group that is unfazed by runs?
We've been here so many times. I mean, we don't like getting down that big, but we know it's a long game. We have guys that make shots, get stops, and when we shoot them together, we can go on runs and do what we did tonight.
You got a big game for J-Dub. You got a triple-double from Josh Giddey. This guy steps up big time. Tell me about the efforts of your teammates tonight.
They won us the game. Clearly, I didn't have my best night, but that's what the team is for. They've had my back all season. They had my back again tonight. But we just came in here, did our job. Everyone stuck to the script, and we got a W.
Congrats on the win, Chip.
Appreciate it.
Mark, yeah, too.
Roof, roof. Yeah, so your favorite sideline duo had a really fun time, as you can tell, in Madison Square Garden. Nick had the bird's eye view up there in the radio perch. I was on the ground.
You were on ground level.
On the ground level.
Getting it done down there.
Yeah. With all of the guys. That was so much fun. So much fun. That win in Madison Square Garden, that was win number 52 for the Thunder. Since then, after their win against the San Antonio Spurs last night, the Thunder has now reached that high watermark of 55 wins this season. An incredible, just another incredible benchmark that this Thunder team has hit this season.
Yeah, and just amazing that this team now in back-to-back seasons has had a 15-win improvement mm-hmm. from the season before. Only six other franchises have done that in NBA history, to be able to go back-to-back seasons with jumps of 15 wins.
Yeah.
If the Thunder can get one more win in these next two games, they'll actually have been able to jump by 16 wins in back-to-back years, which is just unbelievable.
Well, and for as long as I've been here, the thing about the Thunder and the thing that they want is sustained success. That's what OKC is after. And that's what we've seen over the last 15 seasons. The Thunder has had five 55-win seasons. That ties the second most in the NBA over that span. The only team that has more, San Antonio, and they have six.
You might have heard that they've been pretty good over the last 20 years.
Historically, they've been pretty decent.
Yeah.
And the Thunder right up there in that same conversation.
Yeah, it's a testament to what was built here, the mm-hmm. leadership from the very top with our chairman, Clay Bennett. Sam Presti is the general manager, the continuity that has existed from the top down. People like Mark Daigneault coming up through the organization that have that great corporate knowledge mm-hmm. of what this place is all about. You know, something that Sam said about Mark that just has really stuck with me is, you know, Mark is a perfect fit because he sees and believes in what the organization wants to be about from a big picture perspective, and he's able to implement it into the daily goings on with the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you see in this 15 win jump, these seasons, you know, so many seasons of 55 wins is a great organizational synergy. And that really helps carry you through each season, these 82 game battles and slogs that test you in every single way. But everybody's pulling the same direction.
Exactly. There's a level of continuity and everybody kind of working together for the same goal. Just to add a little extra context to this, Michael Cage, our beloved Michael Cage, was in the NBA for 15 seasons. Guess how many 55 win seasons he was a part of?
I'm going to guess maybe one.
Two.
Two.
Two. Okay, two. And that just goes to show how it's a difficult thing to accomplish. Yeah. It's not something that happens every day. And the Thunder been able to do it now five times over the last 15 seasons.
That's amazing. And great context there. Sorry to our guy, Mike. Michael. I mean, I wish that
well,
you,
he,
I wish it
to his defense, he brought it up in the broadcast yesterday. And so I was like, all right, I feel like I can repeat this on the podcast today.
Sorry, I wasn't listening well enough, Michael. I should have heard that.
You were doing the walk off. You're fine. No, it's great. It's great. All right. So the Thunder only has two games left on its regular season schedule. I can't believe it. I feel like I blinked and now we're in April and the regular season is now coming to a close. So the final two games on the Thunder's regular season calendar, it's going to be on Friday taking on the Milwaukee Bucks. You might've heard of them, number two team in the Eastern Conference right now. And then on Sunday, welcoming in the Dallas Mavericks. That game is scheduled for 2:30 p.m. Eastern or Central Time.
Yeah, and looking like no Giannis Antetokounmpo for the Bucks, so that's an interesting wrinkle. That last game on Sunday is a matinee.
Yeah.
Who knows what might be going down in terms of, you know, playoff situation for all of the teams involved on Sunday. And that really just kind of brings us to kind of where we're at here as we look at these final two games. And then the Thunder's going to have almost a week off after that, because they're not going to be involved in the play-in tournament. You know, is able to jump up and secure at the worst the number three seed in the Western Conference. Still some opportunities potentially for two or one as things shake out over the next few days. But for the Thunder, it's a matter of, you know, taking care of business.
Yep.
There's a lot to be sorted out kind of in the back half of the Western Conference playoff standings to figure out who you might play in the first round.
Yep.
All of that will be dealt with by, you know, Sunday and next week, and you just focus on you.
I will say that week off for the Thunder between the final game of the regular season and the start of the playoffs, I know will feel really, really nice. Here's a stat that came down the pipeline for us in the broadcast yesterday. The Thunder's game against the San Antonio Spurs was the seventh game in 11 days for OKC in like the ninth different city, and including Oklahoma City. And there were two back-to-backs in those 11 days, and I'm just racking my brain, and it makes sense why I feel so tired right now. And I'm not even playing.
A lot of flights, some bus rides, all sorts of things going on. And, you know, the back-to-backs, when you come home from a long road trip, that first game of the back-to-back, or first game back home, feels like another road game to some degree. You don't even have a chance to really pack your bags.
Exactly.
As Mark Daigneault says, you know, you basically, you get home, you kiss your kids, and you go right back to the arena. And that's how it goes. To have that as your first game back, and then another one the next day, is a whole different animal. So the guys really enjoying a day off today. But we here are faithfully bringing you the Thunder Basketball Universe
podcast. That's right. We're looking out for you, and we got you. And we really appreciate you watching and listening. Be sure to like, rate, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much to our producer, Matt Bishop. And until next time, Thunder up, and catch you later.